Good morning, everybody. My name's Eric, and I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. And welcome to this meeting on starting a new group. In the spirit of the fifth tradition to carry the message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during the session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening, or you can attend another session. And we ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. And when you come up to the microphone, please don't touch the microphone or any of the equipment. It makes sounds on the recording. It's not a good thing. And will you all please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. The SA purpose, Sexaholics Anonymous, is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others to achieve sexual sobriety. And you know, as I read that, I'm constantly reminded of the fact that, why don't I have this memorized yet? All the times I've listened to it and all the times I've read it, how come I have to keep reading it? But I do. Our panelists for this session are going to be Ned O. and myself, Eric H. Ned is from Seattle. I'm from Pensacola, Florida. And what we're going to do is Ned's going to share a reading for a short period out of the white book, and then each of us is going to share for a few minutes on the topic of starting a new meeting, and we're going to talk about our experience with starting new meetings and the things that have seemed to work for us. And then we're going to open it up for sharing or questions, either one. And again, we ask that anyone who choose to share step up to the microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. And I'm going to turn it over to Ned for a moment for a reading from the white book.
I am Ned, I'm a sexaholic, and there's a whole pile of really great readings about starting a new group. I recommend picking up the white book and just read all of part three, and there's everything you'll ever need to know about starting a new group. And actually, I could probably stop right now and just tell you, go home, do your homework, and you'll be fine. But I just picked out one paragraph, and it's out of context, so it might sound a little strange, but I'm just trying to give you a little taste of the wonderful stuff you'll get if you just read part three of the white book. This is on 12-step attraction. The impulse of life arising out of our 12-step reality carries the message of our recovery to other sexaholics. Contacts are made in our own personal lives where we live and work in the world. The central office can often supply names of serious inquirers in any given area. There are ready-made contacts waiting for that precious person-to-person encounter to introduce them to sexual sobriety. The central office also can make available to groups the experiences of other groups that have gone through similar problems and issues. And here, I was just recommending reading the white book. The white book here recommends reading Publicity in the 12th Step from Discovering the Principles. This is what publishers call self-referential stuff. Hey, buy another book, okay? But that just gives you a little taste. If you read that, you could probably ignore everything that Eric or I say here. But anyway, thanks for letting me take the mic here, Eric. I'm a control freak, so... he really took a big risk letting me take the mic first, so I'll respect that and turn it back over to Eric. Thanks.
Thank you, Ned. Thank you. I didn't know that when I turned the mic over to him. I didn't know he was a control freak. There aren't any control freaks here, right? None of us are that way. Hi, once again, I'm Eric, and I'm a sexaholic. And I want to tell you about the meeting in Pensacola this last Monday night. It was a very rewarding meeting. There were 16 people there. 16 is the largest we've had in our meeting. And we've had 16 people at least half a dozen times over the last 6 months. The first time we had 16 was about 4 years ago, and we just can't quite seem to get that 17th person in the room at the same time, even though there were some people missing on Monday night. 15 men and one woman, and the woman was a newcomer. And we've had some women in our meeting in the past, but none of them have stayed. And this woman was a newcomer, and we haven't had a woman in there in about 2 years, and many of our current members are fresh enough in the program that they have never seen a woman in a meeting. And here we are with these 15 men, and all of this tension of this newcomer in the meeting, and yet, this meeting went the way every one of our newcomer meetings went. Everyone shared, we have a special format for newcomer meetings in which people go around and they share some of their story to help the newcomer identify with the program. And all of these men shared their stories, and yet each one of them was careful to share the psychological and emotional aspects of their story, and this woman identified with every one of them as they shared. And she's here. Monday was her first meeting, and she drove up here to Nashville to be part of this conference. We have in the Pensacola area, we now have 3 meetings a week. Monday is our biggest meeting. Thursday, we typically have 6 to 8 people coming on Thursdays. We've got a Saturday morning meeting that's very small, but runs for an hour and a half. It's a select couple of people who really like to have a little longer time with each other. We also have spun off meetings to 2 meetings a week in Mobile, which is about an hour away. 2 meetings a week in Destin, Florida, which is about an hour the other way. We have 1 meeting a week in Crestview, Florida. We've got meetings getting started in Fort Walton Beach and in Eastport, which is down near Apalachicola. And as of last night, Geneva, Alabama. I had this email request a month ago from somebody who was in the Geneva, it's a little tiny town in southern Alabama that's nowhere near anything. It's an hour and a half from Dothan, Alabama, which isn't all that big. And I got this email a month ago, and last night at the birthday party, I had somebody else come up to me and say, "Hey, I'm looking for a meeting in Geneva, Alabama." This is God's doing. This is not me. This is not, these kind of coincidences, I don't believe in coincidence anymore. That's what we have now around our area. And we've started an intergroup, and we have connection among the groups, and as well as all the way over to Mississippi and New Orleans, and we've got this connection of people who are sharing ideas with each other about what works. In May of 2000, when I moved to Pensacola to rejoin my wife, none of that existed. None of that existed. When I first came up there, the first meeting I went to, there were 4 people, including me. And of those 4 people, nobody had more than 2 weeks of sobriety, including myself, because although I'd been separated for 7 months, I'd acted out twice in that 2-week period in rejoining my wife. And the meeting was really weak. There was no format to be followed. People sat down and shared about their problems. We had one fellow in the meeting. Every single week he would come back and he would share about the things he'd done bad that week and how his wife was going to leave him, and his shares just took you boom right down into the floor. So depressing to listen to him. And people were acting out. The other 2 in the meeting were acting out every week or two. It wasn't what I wanted. Although I had acted out recently in the emotional turmoil of coming back to my wife, I'd been down in Central Florida where we had lived before we separated. And in Central Florida, my meetings there were sort of weak too. My home meeting in Melbourne, Florida only had 4 or 5 people attending, and there wasn't a whole lot of strength in that meeting either. There was one guy with just over a year, and that was about it. And so consequently, because I needed recovery, because I was desperate for recovery, I was driving as much as an hour and a half each way to get to 4 to 5 meetings a week in Cocoa Beach and Titusville and all the way over to Orlando and Lake Mary to get to all of these meetings because I needed the meetings. And I come to Pensacola and I find out there's 1 meeting a week and it's got 4 people in it and it's really, really weak. I couldn't stand that. I needed more than that. I was desperate for more than that. And so what I did was, first thing I did was I started a second meeting. I turned to the one guy who really seemed he wanted recovery along with me, and I said, why don't we just start meeting on Thursdays also? And he said, yeah, and the other two said, no, once a week is all I can take of this stuff. And so the two of us started meeting on Thursdays, and we just started meeting regularly every Thursday, and it was just two of us. And for months and months, it was just two of us. And every once in a while, somebody else would show up, and then they'd stay a couple of weeks, and then they'd leave again, and it'd be back to the two of us. And we just continued to meet. And we gained a lot of friendship between the two of us in doing that. We learned an awful lot about each other, learned how things work that way. My experience up to that point, 7 months in recovery, included not just 4 to 5 meetings a week, but it also included not a lot, but I was starting to do some travel for my business. And I had come to this conference here in Nashville in January 2000, and I'd met people who had the SA shine, as Jess Lehrer used to talk about it, people whose faces were lit up, who were excited at what they had. And I said, that's what I want. On page 88 of the white book, the words emotional sobriety jumped out of the page at me. And I said, yeah, that's what I want. And I saw it here. And in the little bit of travel I was doing for my business then, which was just beginning to get started again after all of my depredations, I went to meetings in other places. When I was going to go someplace, I'd find out where the meetings were, and I'd go meet those people. And I saw how meetings worked, and I saw good meetings and how they worked. And I said, we got to have this. I have to have this. And so I looked around this table of four people, kind of sit, not really meeting real well, and I said, this doesn't even look like an SA meeting. And so the first thing I did was I ordered some books. And just on my own, I paid for them myself. And I bought the books, and I brought them down into the meeting, and I bought a box to keep them in. And I started every meeting, I would show up 15 minutes early, which incidentally is unusual for SA. I understand AA. I'm not an alcoholic, but I understand in AA people show up an hour early for the meetings. In SA, it's typically characterized by when the meeting starts at 7 o'clock, at 6:59, two people walk into the room furtively looking over their shoulder and trying to hide their eyes, and they don't talk to each other until somebody opens the meeting. And then the meeting goes on, and right after the meeting, everybody skates away like cockroaches back to their holes. Well, that's the sick meetings anyway. The strong meetings do what the AAs do, show up early. And so I started showing up early. I'd come up 15 minutes early, I'd pull out this box of books, and I'd lay the books out on the table. And nobody said anything about it. I just did it because I wanted it to look like an SA meeting. And so we started doing that. And that kind of affected things because they realized this literature is here. And these other guys started reading the literature. And we started talking about the literature. And we actually started sharing out of the literature instead of just talking about the problem. And that helped an awful lot. It helped our meetings get stronger. And then about a year later, one of the guys, we were beginning to grow a little bit. And we had maybe 4 to 6 people meeting. And the one guy who was such a negative person wasn't attending anymore. It's really sad. I wish he would. He'd find something completely different now than he had 8 years ago. But about a year later, one of our guys came into the meeting, and he had just come from his therapist, and his therapist had told him, you know, you don't really have a 12-step meeting there. And he said, what do you mean? And his therapist said, well, that's because you never read the steps, and you don't have any sponsorship going on, and you don't really work the steps, and so it must not be a 12-step meeting. And he brought that in and shared about it in the meeting. And we scratched our head a little bit, and we said, well, yeah, she's kind of right. And so we started thinking about that. What we realized is that the format in the back of the white book, if you follow that meeting format, you will rarely read the 12 steps. Because the format has the 12 steps lumped in with a whole bunch of other readings, and it says toward the end of the meeting format, it says read one of these. Either the steps, or the tradition, or the sexual sobriety, or all of these other things. And so we realized that in following that format, we weren't emphasizing the steps. And so we rearranged the format. And we put the steps at the front, and we read them every single meeting, which is what the AAs do also. And so we started reading the steps at the beginning. And as we were doing that, I said, well, you know, if we're not going to follow the format in the white book, then let's go ahead and create one. And I sat down on my computer and I took the format from the white book and I took the steps and put them at the front. And then I went to some other literature and I pulled some other paragraphs from the other literature, like the paragraph about sponsorship and some other things. And I put them into the format and I didn't make any of this up. I drew it all from the literature that was there, and I created this format, and I brought it in, and I laid it on the table, and I said, why don't we use this? And the guy said, well, yeah, sounds like a good idea to me. That was our group conscience. And we started following this format. It's amazing now, incidentally, that format has grown. We now have four different formats that we use. We have one for a newcomer meeting, when we share our stories with the newcomer. We have our regular meeting format, which is a step meeting format that happens twice a month and walks through the 12 steps every 6 months. We have a leader's choice meeting, which is on the alternate weeks. And then we have a second newcomer meeting also, in which we read pages 53 to 70, I think it is, how to get started out of the white book. And we read that and we share about how do you get started in the program? How did we get started in the program? And that's what we do for a second meeting. We have these four format meetings, and all the guys who are part of this 16-person meeting now, they think that these formats are just, you know, formal things that came down from on high. Uh-uh. I made them. I made them up as we needed them. And I drew from the literature, and I put it into my computer, and I printed it out, and I brought it in. And we've got this binder, this three-ring binder with all of these meeting formats in it. And all I've done is just fill the binder with stuff. We've created service. No, I defined service positions, and I told people, well, you know, we need to have somebody managing money. And one of the guys said, I can do that. And so this started growing also. And that got added into the literature that went in this little white binder that we have that guides our meetings. Where did I get all of this stuff? I got it from listening to people at conferences. I got it from my travels, which are pretty extensive now, and I've been to meetings all over the United States and in Australia. And there's an Australian here. We've met down there. And I've been to meetings all over the place, and I just see what people do in their meetings. And I take it back to Pensacola and I say, well, you know, this is a really good idea. I see people do this. And sometimes now there's enough people, there's enough new leadership in the meeting that I don't have to be doing all of this myself. Now there's enough people following that I've taken all of these computer files. It was just a week and a half ago. I took all these computer files and I realized that I was still holding them, but other people were doing the leadership. And so I sent them out to all of those people and I said, hey, I've been maintaining all of these things. Somebody else needs to do this stuff and hold it together at this point. We also, one other thing that's helped us grow is mailings. And we have sat down on a Saturday and just created a workshop when we stuff envelopes. And we create a format of a letter introducing therapists and pastors and organizations to SA and let them know that there's meetings in the area and how they can contact the meetings in the area. And we include the SA brochure in there, and sometimes now we include the information for the healing professional brochure, and we send those out. And we just do a big mailing, pick the names out of the phone book and stuff a lot of envelopes and send them out. We have no idea whether those mailings have actually contributed to anybody coming to the meeting. Because nobody has come to the meeting and said, I came because of that mailing. But we have had a lot of people come who say, well, my therapist said I should come here. So maybe they've connected, maybe they haven't. But regardless of whether that's happened, the effect on the people in the meeting has been good. To sit down and do this together and send out these envelopes has bonded us together and helped us to grow. So I've been talking about the things that we have done that have helped us grow to this change from a week meeting of four people talking about the problem to 16 people who can bring in a female newcomer and make her feel welcome and make her connect, help her connect with the program that really does work for men and women. This is an incredible difference in these years. And I sat there in that meeting Monday evening, and I was in tears watching this go on and thinking how God has worked through me to make this happen. And I was awed and honored to have been part of this. So let me summarize some of the thoughts and principles that have guided my actions in this growth of 8 years in this. One was my own need, my own desperation. Just like everything else in recovery, we don't do this stuff unless we're desperate for something different in our life. And I was desperate for something different in my life, and I was appalled to be faced with the prospect of only having one meeting a week that talked about the problem. I knew that I couldn't stay sober, and I knew that with the kinds of things that I was doing before recovery, that if I slipped back again, I would be dead, because I was risking my life in the things I did. And so I was desperate, and I needed something more. So that's a core part of this. If you want to start a new meeting, recognize that you need it. And then second is persistence. Remember that meeting on Thursday where we met week after week with just two of us? There were times when one of us wasn't there, and the other one would sit there. This just happened to me New Year's Day. Our Thursday meeting, New Year's Day, nobody else showed up. I sat in the parking lot for about 15 minutes and read the white book. And I just sat there waiting to see if anybody else showed up. This persistence of being there and being available. On my travels, I was out in California in, Ventura County, California. And I showed up for a meeting that I knew was there, but did not know that they had moved the meeting location. And I was doing the same thing. This isn't even my home meeting. And I'm sitting out in front of this meeting location in my rental car, reading the white book, and another vehicle drives up beside and parks beside me in this empty parking lot. And I get out and talk with this man, and turns out this man was a newcomer who also had this outdated meeting schedule. Wow, what a gift. Sit there in my car and talk with a newcomer at a meeting that wasn't even my meeting. And so persistence. And the second one is third one is structure. If you're starting a new meeting, provide the structure that can help other people. And don't be afraid to do that. Just create the structure. When you're first starting the meeting, nobody's going to tell you no. If you come in with some ideas, as long as it's in line with the literature and coming out of the stuff that other meetings do that works, bring it in and put it on the table. You don't need formal meetings to authorize this stuff. You just need to have the structure so that people can fit. And where do you get that structure? You get that structure by doing what you're doing right now, coming to conferences, listening to other people, going to other meetings, and seeing what other meetings do so that you'll have the information to create a structure that will work. You have to be willing to do that, willing to provide that structure, willing to just step out there and say, okay, this is what other people have done, why don't we do this? But of course, none of us are control freaks, and so that's not in our lexicon to go off and try to create something. But there's a caution in that too, because throughout this entire process, I have had to be exceedingly careful about that, because I would, in my natural mode, I would control all of this. I would do it the way I think it should be done. And I would make sure that everybody towed the line to do it my way. And as soon as I start thinking like that, I'm in my addiction. And so every time I'd bring something like this in, I would bring it in and lay it on the table and I'd say, what do you think? And I'd let the group decide. That group conscience really is important, even if the group is only two. Make sure that people are working together on it. And the biggest thing of all is that remember that I didn't bring these two guys from Geneva, Alabama. The growth of this stuff is up to God. And if you have found that spiritual awakening that the step 12 talks about, and if you're trying to do this 12-step work out of that spiritual awakening, then acknowledge the fact that the growth and the power and everything that's going to happen is going to be God's doing, as you understand Him, not yours. So that's my thoughts, and that's what's happened with me in Pensacola. And I hope that it helps some of you. Thanks.
I'm an anonymous exaholic. And I'll be pretty brief here. Actually, I arranged this way. I was pretty sure that Eric had this pretty well covered, mm-hmm. and that I wouldn't, if I prepared a big elaborate thing ahead of time, that it would be really repetitive, because we have a lot of common experience here. One thing I did want to mention, if you're thinking about starting a new group, this is something called service. You're doing service. And I don't know if it's been mentioned this week this weekend by anybody, but there's an unwritten rule that you get double sobriety credit for service. Ask your sponsor. This is true. So there are people here this weekend that have 50 years of sobriety just because they do service. Seriously. But, I mentioned at the beginning that if you want to start a new meeting, I highly, highly, highly recommend read part 3 of the white book. And then when you're done, go back and read it again. In fact, one thing we've been doing in our meetings in the Seattle area more is reading all the way through a book, including part 3, even though it's not about the steps, but it is about our common welfare. Now, the first tradition is our common welfare comes first because we need each other. That's why I start a new meeting, is because I need other sexaholics in order to maintain my own sobriety. I have tried to start a meeting before. I've tried this before, to start a meeting because other people needed sobriety. And funny thing, that didn't get very far. But I learned early on from my first sponsor, if I need another meeting, I need meetings for sobriety. And if I need another meeting, it's up to me to start one. This guy would just start meetings. He needed more than one meeting a week, so he'd start another meeting. Sometimes they fly, sometimes they don't. You know, like Eric said, it's not up to me to make this go, but it is up to me to show up. And I love Eric's picture of just sitting in the parking lot or sitting in the meeting waiting for somebody to show up, because I need to be ready. And that's the biggest part of starting that new meeting is being ready. The meeting exists for the newcomer. That's why we gather together in a meeting, to reach out to the newcomer. And so that's why we do these readings. Why do we do the same reading over and over again? Because there may be somebody that shows up that night, it's the first time they've heard that, and it's going to save their life. That's why we do it. And funny thing, I get my life when I do that. Doesn't matter if I've read this one time or 100 times, and I'm sure we'll have that experience where we read something. Oh, where'd that come from? I know I've read this book before. I didn't see this part before. But unless we do it repeatedly, we don't get it. You know, I did the disease repeatedly. Why should I have a problem with doing recovery repeatedly?
I wrote a note down. Oh.
The traditions. That's the other thing that I highly recommend reading over, is the traditions. Sometimes there's, and not just reading the text of the 12. There's a couple of other places where you can get more. In the back of the 12 and 12, they've got the long extended version of the 12 steps, or the 12 traditions. And of course, the last part of the 12 and 12, actually fairly brief readings, each on the traditions. And sometimes it feels like, hey, we're doing the steps, we're about sobriety, what's the tradition stuff? And that's what keeps us together. Maybe you've heard the thing that the steps keep me from committing suicide. The traditions keep me from committing murder. But it is. It's what keeps the program together. It keeps it moving, and we need each other for sobriety. So that's a number one. I didn't want to talk just a little bit about, this is about starting a meeting. It's also legitimate, I think, to end meetings sometimes if they're not working. The meeting is there for sobriety, for fellowship. Sometimes we start a new meeting so an old meeting can die. I can't control that. I can't control anybody in the meeting. Either people show up or they don't. And maybe I need to go to another city to get this kind of support I need for sobriety. But if I'm showing up for the right reasons, if I'm there because I need sobriety, other people that need sobriety will show up. I trust God for that, and I've seen it happen over and over again. I've seen the other thing happen when I don't show up for sobriety. Other people, people that do show up, yeah, I won't even go there. Anyway, we still have about a half hour for questions and sharing, so please, again, come up to the mic, speak clearly, because there's a whole world of hurting people out there that need to hear what we have to say.
Thank you. My name is Paul. I'm from Illinois. First, I would agree with and reiterate everything that these two gentlemen have just shared. Very good. I'll just hopefully briefly share the story of how I started a new meeting. I live in southern Illinois, on the Illinois side from St. Louis, often referred to as Metro East. And Metro East is an interesting area. It's where all the adult establishments are. And there are no meetings in southern Illinois. In fact, I live in a community, a small town there, and I looked in Illinois, and the nearest meeting was in Springfield, Illinois, 75 miles away. And then I looked in Missouri, in St. Louis, and there are a number of meetings in St. Louis. But the nearest one on a daily basis is about 80 miles round trip for me if I were to attend that one. And on days that I work, it meets at a time where I wouldn't be able to attend. And there are a few evening meetings and some weekend meetings that I could go to. But when gas prices started getting high, you know, $2, $3, $4 a gallon, I was realizing it was costing me $10 to drive round trip to a meeting. You know, that got kind of tough. And I know people have told stories about driving 100 miles to meetings. But I knew that I needed a meeting closer to home, you know, in Illinois. And so I thought about trying to start one. It's like, you know, like some of us might be sitting here thinking, how in the world do I start a new meeting? And will I be the only one there? You know, how do I get the word out? How do I find other people to come to my meeting? One of the additional challenges about starting a meeting in the Metro East area from St. Louis is that most of the men and women, whatever, in the SA groups in St. Louis have a boundary. It is the river. They will not cross the river because there's a lot of sin on our side of the river. You know, it's where all the establishments are that they used to go to act out and things like that, a lot of clubs and everything. And so, you know, some of these guys told me I simply will not, you know, cross the river to come to a meeting. So anyway, well, I want to tell you the quick story about how eventually started the meeting. First, I took an afternoon and I drove all over our area trying to find a good location. I wanted it near one of the major interstates so people coming could get there easily and be able to find the place. And so I drove around looking for churches. Most of the meetings in St. Louis meet at Catholic churches and parish centers and basements and things like that. So I thought, well, that'd be a natural. Some of the other churches might be a little more resistant or whatever. So I finally found a location, perfect. Right off the highway, just a mile from the interstate. And so I called up the priest at that place and explained what we'd like to do. And he said, well, I'll have to think about it. I'll have to talk to the church elders, and I'll get back to you. So a little bit of time went by, and I checked back with them. It's like, well, I spoke to the church elders, and they said, no, we don't want that group meeting here. And I thought, okay, well, that place was perfect. I really wanted it there. It's not going to happen. And I waited, and nothing happened, and I couldn't seem to find another location. So I just kind of let it drop. I think, well, maybe it's not meant to be. And I look for excuses for things. You know, it's like, okay, it's not my fault. It's just not meant to be. So more time went by, and actually a whole year. And I was at the summer convention. I believe this was the year that it was in St. Louis, about 3 or 4 years ago. And at the convention that week, I made a vow. I have got to go to more meetings, so we have to have a meeting in Illinois. And so I called up this priest again, and I said, would you consider letting us have this SA meeting at your church? And he said, well, I'd like to meet you before we start, but this time I'm not going to ask the church elders. I'm just going to let you do it. And so he said, but I'd like to meet you before you start meeting and find out more about it and everything. And I said, so when can you meet? Or he asked me when I could meet, and I said, well, I'm available all week next week because I'm off work. I can meet with you anytime, any day. He's like, okay, how about this coming Tuesday at 1 o'clock? Now, you have to know that 2 weeks before that, I had made an appointment to meet up with someone to act out at Tuesday at 1 o'clock. And the priest did not know that, but God did. That's what people in the program call a God moment. And that was confirmation to me that I need to put that behind me and I need to go forward with the meeting. So, met with the priest. We've now been meeting there for over 2 years. And as he shared, a lot of the, at the very beginning, you know, I took my own money. I went and bought a bunch of materials. I got a big black box to put it all in. I kept up the meeting format from the back of the, I'd been attending some meetings in St. Louis, so I used, you know, their formats and typed up what was in the back of the book and we used that. But for about the first year, there were, the very first night that we started, we did have 8 people because a bunch of the guys from St. Louis came over to support us to get us started that very first night. They all like carpooled over. But for most of the first year, we had 2 or 3 people at most of the meetings. Never in that first year was I ever the only one. There were always at least 2 of us, but 2 or 3. So one of the things he said that I want to reiterate is persistence. If you decide to start a new group, be committed to it, be persistent. It took me a year to even like get this thing to start, and then it was like a miracle the way it did happen. And then for the first year, there were 2 or 3 of us. The second year, we were up to 4 or 5, and I can't say 16 now. Our highest that we've had is 8. We've had 5, 6, 7, 8 several times recently. So we're in that group. And what we kind of like about it is that number is almost perfect for some good sharing time. You know, one of the meetings in St. Louis can have anywhere from 25 to 35 people, and you get like 30 seconds to talk, you know, during the share time, or a minute. Or if anybody goes over that, we start looking at them like, hey, you're hogging the time here. But in our group, with only 6 or 7 most of the time, you know, you can have 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. I mean, you can really share what's going on in your heart and what's going on in your life. And the same, like, 4 guys are there almost every single week. And so we have truly become like brothers. We talk to each other on the phone as well. But anyway, so to just kind of wrap it up, it's just persistence. Just do what it takes. I also say, it was selfish. I mean, it was for me. I was not doing this to save the world. I was not doing it so some newcomers could come in and have now been attending for over a year, and things like that. It was for me. I didn't want to drive 50 miles, and I didn't want and spend an hour each way, and so on. So be persistent. Stick with it. If somebody says no the first time, you know, give them a little bit of time, pray some more, and ask them a second time. Maybe they'll say yes the second time. Thanks.
My name is Paul S., as in sexaholic. I'm from Dallas. Back in the fall of 89, I got there and I was looking for a meeting, and there was no meeting. And I think I called, where the central office was in that decade. And I think I got a name or 2. Anyway, I called them up and we started meeting in an Episcopal church once or twice. And then we were looking for a place to land, and so we called the one of the local hospitals, the pastoral care office, and asked if we could have a meeting there. And they were like, well, are you connected with the hospital? And we said, well, no, not exactly. And anyway, somehow or other, we got included as continuing education. And so we started meeting there at this hospital, and would call and renew each year. And somehow or other, you know, it worked. And frequently in the beginning, yeah, I would get there. I would sit 20 minutes. 20 minutes was my, you know, 10 minutes if you go to a class in a college, you know, the professor doesn't show up in 10 minutes, you leave, you can leave. At least that's what I remember. Anyway, so I would sit for 20 minutes and read and then leave. And we had different kinds of starts. People want to break off and start new ones, and it would happen and fizzle. One of the things that hasn't been mentioned yet that we stumbled on was I found that people would be at a meeting, they had this enthusiasm after about 4, 5, 6 weeks, they want to start a new meeting. And it's kind of like, yeah, okay. And we finally decided, you know what, you can start a new meeting, but you have to get 3 or 4 people who are committed to go to that meeting for 6 weeks. To give it some kind of a stability that could start it, because we found it it was debilitating for us to have someone just kind of say, start something, and then it falls apart. And because the first thing we did back in 89 October, we met. By 90, we set up a phone. We did that out of our own money. We set up a phone, we got books, and we got a post office box. And we did send out literature to different professionals in the area. We put the information on the phone, the answering. We got an answering service so that it wasn't in anybody's house. And that way, no matter if a person, you know, left the program or whatever, it didn't matter because the answering machine was not at his house. It was an answering service, not where somebody live, but a service where they just, you call in, and you get this machine somewhere in the sky, and then I could call in and get the messages, and if someone wanted help, directions, I could give it to them. And so we would put the meetings on that service, on the machine in the sky. And matter of fact, I think it is, it's something like Sky Talk or something. And so if a meeting is going to start, and we wouldn't put it on the answering machine or in the service in the sky until the thing had lasted 6 weeks, so that we didn't want to have information out there and then have a newcomer show up and nobody's there. Anyway, we moved about 3 or 4 times, not because anybody got in trouble, but somehow or other we outstayed our welcome. We went to another hospital, and now we're at a spirituality center that's part of a United Methodist Church. And there's all kinds of 12-step meetings. It really is powerful, though, to start a meeting and have it take off. And it really helps in one's own sobriety. One of the things that we also have, we have Sexaholic of the Month. And we try to sign people up for that. And the Sexaholic of the Month has to get there 10-15 minutes ahead of time.
You get your own parking space?
The Sexaholic of the Month has to set up the chairs, straighten things up, pick up the trash, and make it a welcoming space for other people to come, and also to get the books out. We also have books that, you know, some people are too lazy to bring their own book, or they feel entitled that somebody should provide it for them. So we got the book, the white book, but we got the book with the cover on it that says Sexaholic of the Month on it, so that people won't steal it and take it. You know, it's kind of a lend thing, and so we have 6 to 10 of those that for people to borrow and use during the meeting, because we have from 4. And I understand last Tuesday, which I wasn't at, there was 20 people at the meeting, which was probably the most we've had. And then they keep saying, well, let's get a bigger meeting, a bigger meeting room. And I say, you know what, let's keep it small. So that I said, there's nothing worse than being, you know, like there's probably, what, 25, 30, 30 people in this room. And it's a big room, and it feels like there's not that many people here. But if you got a small room, there's nothing like being at a party where everybody's jostling each other. You feel like you're part of something that's worthwhile. If it's just big, you know, it just doesn't feel the same. So we've kept it so that we can only have like about 20 people max, 16 to 20. And you've been in that meeting, Eric. So, I mean, 16, and after 16, people are sitting on the floor. Anyway, Sexaholic, it's a great little idea, because that way we have somebody, it shifts around in terms of people taking responsibility. I'm Paul Sexaholic.
Hi, group. I'm Dimitri. I'm grateful to be a sexaholic. And this morning I was, you know, walking around feeling self-conscious like I do a lot of times. And there was this guy that I just wanted to come up and introduce myself to. And, you know, I got just enough courage together to go and talk to him. And, you know, something he told me was that the convention doesn't start for him unless he gets in front of the mic. And so I put together enough courage to, you know, stand in front of the mic. And what this program does for me is that it gives me just enough courage to open that door. And then when I open that door, there's just so many other doors that are available for me. There's so many paths that are available for me to go. And on the topic, I'm from Blacksburg. I live in Blacksburg, Virginia. We have a meeting in Roanoke, Virginia that I go to. That's been there a couple of years. At most, we've had maybe 11 people or so. And we started a meeting in Blacksburg this past summer in my apartment, actually. And we have a few people show up. We have a venue now. And the woman that I was in a relationship with at the time, I told her, you know, I helped start this meeting at Sexaholics Anonymous, and I'm a secretary there. And she said, well, maybe you should put that on your resume. And I didn't know what to say to that, you know. But, you know, and sometimes, you know, sometimes we show up and we talk about the problem, and sometimes we show up and we throw up, and other times we talk about the program, and we're trying, you know. And one of the things that we have tried was doing the mailing list, where we send out a bunch of letters to psychologists in the area, but that didn't work very well. I don't think we've got a single response from that. We spent a lot of time on it. That did not work very well. And the thing that I've been trying to do lately was just cold calling churches in the area, just showing up at a pastor's door, and I usually call them ahead of time, and pastors, just FYI, they don't answer their phones and they don't return calls. But sometimes if you call, you know, if you call them enough, somebody will pick up the phone and you can go and talk to them. You know, I don't usually say that it's a Sexaholics Anonymous program over the phone, but a lot of people don't know that we exist. People don't know that this program exists. And these people, the pastors, I think they're on the front line. They're there and they know what's going on, you know, in their church. So I just show up with I print out, you know, put together a little Word document where, you know, I put what is Sexaholics Anonymous, the purpose, the traditions, the steps, give it to them, give them the times. And people are very, very receptive. People are very, very receptive and they get excited about it. You know, again, I don't know, we haven't been doing it long enough to know what comes of it, but it's another thing that we do. And, you know, another thing I want to share is that there's a lot of open AA meetings. And for me, open AA meetings are sometimes even more helpful than SA meetings, because in SA, you know, you get five guys together and they've got, you know, 5 days of sobriety between them, and they just start dumping, and you just want to kill yourself after you get out of there. But, you know, but at AA meetings, there's a lot of, you know, experience, strength, and hope to go around. So I would, you know, for me, I have two meetings a week. When I have time, I go to AA meetings, you know, and it's also been a great help. And AA is sort of the, you know, it's the mother of all recovery programs, and they really stick to their traditions, and it's just another experience to see how people do these 12-step recovery meetings. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm Ed. I'm a sexaholic from Columbus, Georgia. I started a meeting in Columbus, and after going to Atlanta for the meetings up there, 2 hours away. And specifically what I did was I got a post office box, and then I got a voicemail line from a beeper company or pager company. That I told them I didn't want the pager, I just wanted the voicemail, and it costs like $5 a month, real cheap. And it's that thing in the sky that somebody was talking about, where I can just call this number and punch the button and put in a security code, and I get the messages. And so I went to an office supply place and got some labels, ordered some Helping Professional pamphlets from Seiko, put those labels on there, printed off the labels with the P.O. box and the phone line number on it, and put it on those labels and sent them off to all the psychologists, psychiatrists, marriage counselors, churches, and it seems like I'm leaving one out, but I think those were the main ones.
Jails.
Pardon?
Jails.
Yeah, jails, I guess. And so persistence, I think, is one thing. Patience is another. It seems like there's something else. That's all I can think of. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Paul Sexaholic. One of the things we found helpful when we were starting meetings, especially when there wasn't much recovery in the room, was using the conference recordings, because it's sort of like having a, as they're saying, if there's only 5 days of sobriety in the room, well, suddenly you're going to have 10 years in the room by listening to someone there, and it's a good way to start a meeting. And that was the way I learned in AA, that it was, you start a meeting on a strong point. So having the conference recordings, we've done many meetings like that, especially when there are topic meetings as well as speaker meetings on conference recordings. It's a way of really introducing a lot of different things, and it sort of livens things up a bit. I've been part of starting lots of different meetings over the years, and I've done, as Eric did, you start with, putting the meeting format on the computer and all that sort of stuff. But the two meetings I go to, I moved, and getting to SA meetings has been difficult. And so I mostly go to a morning, most days I go to a morning AA meeting. But twice a week I've got an appointment with my therapist, and afterwards there's some of the local SA members, we meet for lunch, and sometimes, a couple of times it's been just me, sometimes it's been just one other, and other times we've had up to 8 people. And, there's no meeting format or whatever, but suddenly, we're sitting around the table in the food court, or sometimes out in the patio, and someone says, I'd like to share, and it's because these are all, experienced SA members, it's like the SA cone of silence comes down, and everyone sort of, is quiet, and there's no crosstalk without having to read any guidelines or anything like that. It just all happens, and then there's this round of sharing, and it's usually fairly solution focused. It's people getting current, but solution stuff. And then at the end of going round, then we just start chatting again, and that's the end of the meeting. So, going to the last Akron conference and seeing the gatehouse where Bill and Bob met, it sort of reminded me that, when they got together that first night in 1935, they didn't sit down and say, now who's going to read the AA preamble? And the other thing that I've seen in my time in California is sometimes a bunch of SA members go to an AA speaker meeting or Al-Anon meeting. So it's a way of, as we're still fellowshipping as SA members, but we're going to an AA meeting and hearing some really good experience, strengths and hope. Thanks.
Mike J. from Providence, Rhode Island. We started two meetings in Rhode Island since I got there. I got there in 2002, and there was no meeting, and as it was said, I needed a meeting. And I don't know where the other two fellows came from. I don't know how we got together. But anyway, three of us started a meeting, and one has dropped out. Haven't seen him in a couple of years. The other fella is... For the first 2 or 3 or 4 years, it was 2, 3, 4 guys meeting once a week, and persistence. And we followed the White Book guideline in the back room meeting. And usually what it turned out to be, we would have one meeting with the first step in the White Book, next week would be first step in the the step in the White Book, the step in the Big Book, and then the 12 and 12, the step in that. And that's 3 meetings a month, and then the 4th meeting was something else. We persisted, and I'd say until about 2 years ago, we were 5 or 6 or 7 maybe. But the past year has really exploded, and we've over 20 now. And I'm really happy that this is fulfilling my need. I'm glad that started. God's God's working. This past year, in 2008, I'm sorry, we started a new meeting, and I want to bring this out. That first meeting, we started because I needed it, and I guess the other guys needed it, and that was my intention. This new meeting that we started last year, there was a request. We had talked about starting a new meeting, and nobody was doing anything. And so I took the initiative to find a place and have a time and go and commit to that meeting. I don't know if it's for me or for the newcomer. I know the meeting is for the newcomer, so I'm committed to a meeting for the next 2 years. And I've been at that meeting by myself, and I've got the telephone and had a telephone meeting with other guys as I'm waiting. I guess it must be really for my own sobriety that we're trying to start a second meeting in Rhode Island. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Doug, sexaholic from Minneapolis. I started a meeting in the northern suburbs of Minneapolis, same thing, because I needed a meeting in that area. And I was pretty intent on trying to get into a hospital. I liked the idea of a hospital because it had free parking. It was allowed for more anonymity for the newcomer, and it was open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days. So we've had meetings on Christmas and New Year's and never had a problem. But anyhow, getting into that hospital took persistence once again. It took me several months of trying to get in because the hospital's policy was, yes, they would allow an outside group in, but only if we were sponsored by some unit of the hospital. Well, I thought, piece of cake. I'll just go to the rehab part that dealt with drug and alcohol addiction in the hospital, and talked with the person there. And the head of that department said, "Well, I have to take it to my staff." She took it to her staff, and the staff turned us down, which was a real shock to me. Except that I began to realize, you know, there are some in drug and alcohol addiction that don't think we have an addiction, that we just have a problem, not an addiction. And that was probably what was going on. Well, I was very discouraged, ready to abandon the whole thing. But I thought, you know what? We're a spiritual program. So I went to the ministerial part, to the hospital chaplaincy, and explained that we wanted to start a spiritual program there, and got them to sponsor us. So many months later, we did get it going. A couple of things, though, that have not been spoken about that I think for those considering starting a meeting need to kind of put in the hopper. One is that level of discouragement, secondly, of trying to get through that, of just being persistent. But then another piece of it is some of the responsibility that comes with it. I've been fortunate. We started the meeting 2.5 years ago. I've never been the only one there. The meeting now is we're running, you know, 7 to 10 or so. In the early days of it, one of the difficulties was everyone was a newcomer except for me. And having to, in some ways, also play a teacher role, and yet knowing my propensity for wanting to control, of trying to keep that part in balance, but helping them to learn that we respond back when we give our names, to use their name before they speak, to hear when we're doing the readings, and so on and so forth, because they didn't know that, and I felt that it was important for them as they ventured out to perhaps go to another meeting that they would know how we do it. So balancing that control and teaching and so forth. The other thing was I was the only one with sobriety. And so I ended up being asked to sponsor everyone that came to the meeting. And I didn't know what to do with that. And there's still days when I go, I just don't know what to do with this. And many of the guys, because they were newcomers, were not going to some of the other meetings in town yet, so that was difficult too. So that was a couple of areas that for me have been a challenge. I think that's it. Okay. Thanks.
Steve, sexaholic. I just want to be very brief and ask anybody who's trying to start a new meeting, please contact Kay in central office. Not only can she help people find your meeting that are they might live two doors down from you, but they'll call her to find the meeting in your area. Number one. Number two, she can offer a lot of support and encouragement, and she's even got stuff that she'll send you to help start up a meeting. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. That's an excellent reminder to all of us. And with that, we'll close this meeting. Anything you've heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer, but let's stand up and move to a point where you can hold hands with somebody. Great. Thank you for joining together today. And whose Father, who keeps us safe?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
Thanks, guys.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, it's really good. I like it. Thank you, Eric.
Eric, I wanted to say something. Something.
I'm trying to move away from the
microphone. Yes. And I didn't have to say anything.
And now he's a divorce attorney. He's still dealing with the same thing, but now he understands that there's something that, divorce attorneys to defense attorneys because they're, I started my recovery in Nashville. I moved to Green Bay. This week, Mondays there's quite a few people, but Wednesdays maybe, I went showed up to three, and then on Friday they end up being 9 people, whatever. There's 25 people in the county, and they're around in three different meeting areas, but, I'm driving like 80 miles round trip, 90 miles round trip just to get to the meeting, which, I'm willing to go to any length to get inside. And now we started the real one Thursday morning, which is great. But what I, they're doing all these, they're doing mailing specialized, they're just mailing. And to me, that's not, doesn't cut it as if I can really talk to you personally. But they're afraid because of their wrong offenders.
What we have had people show up.